Hi, family. My name is Paul DeLeo. I'm a recovered alcoholic.
Hey, Paul.
Hey, Paul.
No. Hope last week was okay. I wasn't here. I would have liked to have been here, but sometimes God says no. I'm going to try and do a real quick recap of the first four steps, which I discussed. I'm going to try and do 5 to 9 tonight and leave 10, 11, and 12 for next week. I mean, step one, I drank a lot. It didn't go well. I couldn't drink. I couldn't control the amount I took when I drank. When I wasn't drinking, I couldn't stay stopped. That's basically step one. Step two, I've come to believe. That is my experience. It's not something I did when I was at step two. Step two tells me what happened to them after they went through this process. For me, step two was an arrival. It happened when I got to step 10. Step three was a decision, but a decision requires action. If I decide to go to Florida, I'll never get there. As I call the airline, buy a ticket, get on a pack a suitcase, get to the airport, get on the plane. Without action, it's not a decision. It's just a thought. So I had to take these actions, steps 4 to 9, to complete the decision that I made in 3. Last week we talked about 4, and all I'll say about step 4 is that it wasn't to find out how bad I was. It was to find out what I wasn't. I was not a good son. I was not a good friend. I was not a good brother. I was not a good employee, and God had intended me to be all of those things, but my alcoholism got in the way, and I got to see that in step 4. And we're gonna pick up with step 5. You know, it starts on a chapter into action, page 72, and it starts with a question: having made our personal inventory, what shall we do about it? You know, I mean, I don't do it just for the fun of it. The idea of that is to see what it is that is keeping me blocked. I had to find it and then be rid of it, because it talks about that earlier in the book. Face and be rid of the things which are blocking us. I like one of the sentences, a few lines, that now these are about to be cast out. So it's time for me to be rid of. Alcoholics Anonymous is not about getting anything. I didn't get anything since I've come here. I got rid of a lot of stuff. This is really all about subtraction, not addition. It's being rid of everything that's within me. I heard this somewhere just recently, and I've heard it before. Someone asked, I don't even remember the guy, named Michelangelo, when he did the Statue of David, how did he know? And he said, I just took away what wasn't David. And that's what this is about. I've got to take away what's not of God, what's not Paul. I got to become what God actually intended me to be. It says this is perhaps difficult, one paragraph down, this is perhaps difficult, especially discussing our defects with another person. Now, where I come in from in Brooklyn, we don't talk about this ever, you know, with no witnesses. We don't leave witnesses. Anybody that, if you know, you will not, that you're gone. So nobody knew nothing about me. Everything I did, the reason I never went to jail is I did everything I did alone. I never told anybody. And I'm not telling you anything. If I tell you, God knows what you're going to tell. And that was my thought when I got here. But it gives me a little note, a few lines down. It says, the best reason first. If we skip this vital step, we may not overcome drinking. And I sort of came to find it funny later that they don't give you any more reasons. It says the best one first, but where's the rest of them? They don't give any. But that was enough for me. I did not want to start drinking again. So, I'm going to share. I don't believe there's a right way and a wrong way to do this. But my first 5th step, I did on the phone with a guy from Intergroup, because I wasn't telling nobody nothing. So I called Intergroup, and I got a guy on the phone at 10 o'clock one night. And I said, listen, I just wrote a 4th step. Can you listen to it? And I read it to him over the phone. And today, looking back, that's like pretty stupid. It didn't help me at all. But I thought it did. I thought it did, because I did a 5th step. And everything I have done has allowed me to move forward to do it again. This is not something you do. You can't do the steps. Either you're going to live this way of life or you're not. So living this way of life, I've been through these steps, I can't tell you how many times. When I sponsor people, I occasionally will ask someone else to guide me through the book one more time for a new experience. But I haven't done that in years. I work with enough sponsees that when I'm taking them through, I'm going through with them again and again. It has become my way of life. I like what it says. Try to avoid this humbling experience. They have turned to easier methods. Almost invariably, they got drunk. So they're sharing some experience, trying to leave this out. They're saying that most of the people that didn't do it got drunk. And that's a little, you know, a little warning for me. I think I better do this. My experience in the beginning has changed tremendously today, but there are little pointers in here. On the bottom of page 73, it says, we must be entirely honest with somebody if we expect to live long or happily in this world, rightly and naturally. We think well before we choose the person or persons with whom we take this intimate and confidential step. Now, why does it say person or persons? The truth of the matter is, my personal experience, I will tell anyone I sponsor, if you've committed a felony, please don't share that with me in your fifth step. I don't want to know if you've robbed a bank, if you've killed anyone. Bring that to your priest, your rabbi, your minister. Because if you tell me and somebody approaches me and says, you know, an officer of the law says, hey, listen, we know you're an AA, you're sponsoring that guy, Mikey Hatz. We think he robbed a bank. And Mike told me he robbed a bank. I say, yep, that was him. Because I live an honest life today. I'm not going to lie to protect you. So please don't tell me if you've committed a felony. Also, there are times where more light comes in through two windows than one. And sometimes if I'm going to hear a fifth step, I will ask the person that's going to be reading me that fifth step, do you mind if I bring a newcomer? Because one of the guys I'm sponsoring that has 4 months will see things a lot differently than me, 15 years separated from alcohol. He's a lot closer to the problem. So he'll sit there and a little more light comes in from two windows. And I've also been privileged to do some back to basic stuff where we take groups of people through the steps. And I usually share my fifth step with the whole group. You know, I have nothing to hide anymore. I don't have to trust the people that are hearing it. I trust God. So I don't have to worry about who hears it. At the end of the fifth step, you know, the lady says, when we decide who is to hear our story, we waste no time. We have a written inventory. We're prepared for a long talk. We explain to our partner what we're about to do and why we have to do it. Now, the deal is today, my personal belief, it should be shared with your sponsor. If I'm sponsoring you and you expect me to guide you through the rest of these steps, I really need to know what's on your fourth step. It's going to be very difficult for me to help you with 6, 7, 8, 9 if I didn't hear your fourth step. I mean, if you have stuff that you'd rather not share with me, that's great. But I need to hear the majority of it. But when they wrote the book, they didn't have sponsors. This is not a sponsor-reliant program. It's a God-reliant program. They shared it with whoever they could share it with. Later on, sponsors became a really big thing. Back in those days, a sponsor was just the guy that took them from the hospital to the meeting. You know, it was a different situation as it is now. And at the end of it, they give us some fifth step promises. See, there's promises to go with every step. And right in the middle of page 75, tells me what to do. We pocket our pride. We go through it, illuminating every twist of character, every dark cranny of the past. And then here come the fifth step promises. Once we have taken this step, withholding nothing, we are delighted. We can look the world in the eye. We can be alone, at perfect peace and ease. Our fears fall from us. We begin to feel the nearness of our Creator. We may have had certain spiritual beliefs, but now we begin to have a spiritual experience. So this is the beginning of the spiritual experience. The feeling the drink problem has disappeared will often come strongly. We feel we are on a broad highway, walking hand in hand with the Spirit of the universe. And then it gives me some more directions for the end of step 5. So returning home, we find a place where we can be quiet for an hour. It's the only place in the book where it gives you an exact, specific amount of time. An hour means an hour. It doesn't mean 50 minutes. It doesn't mean 55 minutes. It means an hour. It gives me more directions. Taking the book down from the shelf. If it's not on a shelf, I put it there. And then I took it down from the shelf. Because I don't want to screw nothing up. It says, carefully reading the first 5 proposals, we ask if we have omitted anything. For we're building an arch through which we shall walk a free man. And again, it's not about not drinking. This is about becoming a free man. It's asked some questions that we skip. Is our work solid so far? Are the stones in place? Have we skimped on cement put into the foundation? Tried to make mortar without sand. At the end of it, the next top of the next page is, if we can answer to our satisfaction, then we look at step six. But whose satisfaction? I'm sitting alone. It says our satisfaction. That implies that there's another person there. And what they're talking about is God. If I can answer to mine and God's satisfaction, then I look at step six. And I believe that the reason for that is because step five is the beginning of the spiritual experience. It's where I need to start relying more on God, less on my sponsor. The deal is my personal belief. AA has become way too sponsor reliant. People don't do nothing without checking with their sponsor. Why? Well, I get it if you got 3 weeks, 3 months. But when you got 3 years, why are you still checking with your sponsor? Who is your sponsor that they're going to tell you what to do? Didn't they read the chapter that said they had to quit playing God? See, the guys I sponsor, they're not allowed to call me unless they've first spoken to God. And unless it's a real problem. They don't check in with me every day and tell me about their problems. What do I think they should do? Can't run my own life. How can I run their life? And I believe that Alcoholics Anonymous has become way too sponsor reliant. So at this point, it's time to start letting go of the sponsor's hand a little bit, holding on to God a little bit tighter. I'm going to answer to mine and God's satisfaction. And then I look at step six. Since we've emphasized willingness, and everybody knows me, willing, it's an action word. It means you're going to have to take some more action. Step six requires a lot of work in early recovery. I said, all right, God, I'm willing, and nothing happened. Nothing happened. Nothing. I said the prayer, nothing happened. But the truth is, the real work is in step six. What is the work that I have to do? We have emphasized willingness as being indispensable. Are we now ready to let God remove from us all the things which we have admitted are objectionable? So the first thing is, have you admitted that these things are objectionable? Or do you still think that they serve a purpose for you? Do you think stealing or cheating or lying, being dishonest, being jealous, do you think these things serve a purpose? If you do, you're not going to be willing to let go of them. My experience was I had to realize these things were objectionable before I would let go of them. Can he now take them all? Every one. Now here's where they close the loophole. If we still cling to something, we will not let go. We ask God to help us be willing. Willing, an action word. What is the action I'm going to take? My experience over the years has been the only way I can show God I'm willing to have him remove my dishonesty is by practicing honesty. The only way I can show God I would like to have him remove my fear is by showing that I have faith. The only way that I can have God remove my selfishness is by becoming a selfless person. I need to practice the opposite of my defect to the best of my ability with the help of God. And then God will remove the defect as he sees fit. My work is in step six. In step six, God needs me. In step seven, I need God. Step seven says, when ready, we say something like this. My Creator, I am now willing, more action, that you should have all of me, good and bad. I pray that you now remove from me not every defect of character, every single defect of character which stands in the way of my usefulness to you and my fellows. God will use my defects to move me to places that he needs me to be. I'll tell the story right after I'm done with the prayer. Stands in the way of my use to you and my fellows. Grant me strength as I go out from here to do your bidding. Amen. And the next sentence makes a statement which I find pretty important. It says we have then completed step seven. So if I've said the prayer, I've completed step seven. I do not have to work on step seven. How can you work on step seven? I can't remove a defect. Only God can remove my defects. Step seven is God's job. My job is to practice the opposite. Six, say the prayer. I don't care if you say it every day, you say it once, say it 100 times. But once I say the prayer, I've completed step seven. I've asked God to remove these defects. I am practicing the opposite. Now, my experience goes like this. I had a horrible defect of lust when I got here. We talked about it a little bit when I discussed my fourth step. I was trying by my fifth and sixth year, really more or less, God had removed a lot of it from me, but it was still there. And I went to a meeting, and on the table was a bunch of flyers. And one flyer had a picture of a girl wearing a bathing suit on a phone, laying on her little table like this. And because of my defects, I grabbed that flyer. I didn't even look at the other flyers. I grabbed that flyer. This looks like an interesting meeting. And I went to that meeting the following week. And I'll show you how God uses my defects. I got to that meeting, and there was a good-looking young woman sitting in the front. And when I was raised my hand, I shared some stuff, some of my experience and knowledge from the book. And I saw her, she was nodding her head. And I said, oh, geez, maybe I'll come back next week. I'll ask her for a number. So next week I went back, and I walked over, and she said, hey, how are you? Great to see you. And as I'm about to ask her for a number, she says, do you think that you could take me through this book? I'm like, oh, that ruined everything. Because I had enough love for AA that I wasn't going to ask her on a date if I was taking her through the book. And I said, all right, I'd be glad to do that. Maybe when we're done going through the book, we can go out. She said, that's not going to happen. And I said, okay. But what happened was, as she went through the book with me, she started to get better. And her sister noticed her getting better. And her sister said, hey, you think that your sponsor would take me through the book? And she asked me, and I had her sister call me. And her sister called, and I ended up taking her through the book also. And that's now my wife. That's how God works. We work for God together. God knew exactly what to put in front of me, that my defect would, and with that defect, He moved me from here to here to here. But only God can do that. That's why I practice the opposite of my defect. God will take what He wants when He wants. I don't know what's good and what's bad. I've tried to remove those words from my vocabulary. Because it feels good does not mean it's good. Because it feels bad does not mean it's bad. I can share experience about that. I don't have time to do that. But that's just experience. Everything just is. And when I realize that everything is, and in God's world, everything is exactly the way it's supposed to be. Whether I think so or not is of no real importance. So after the prayer, it says, you know, give me strength as I go out for me to do your bidding, which means I'm asking Him for strength to do the rest of these steps and then go work for God. So next thing it says, now we need more action, without which we find faith, without works is dead. Let's look at steps 8 and 9. We had a list of people. We made it when we took inventory. So my fourth step becomes my eighth step list. You think He really meant all when He said made amends to them all? You know, I didn't really, that was just like not a real bad, like I hadn't heard a bad. It wasn't a big deal. Well, maybe I should let her decide that. See, I had to stop playing God and deciding what I thought I needed to make amends for. Bill said all, he meant all. Doesn't say I have to make amends to them all, I have to be willing to make amends to them all. And the truth of the matter is my freedom came in step 8, once I became willing to make amends to them all. And for those of you who know who he is, there's a great gentleman named Don P. who has now passed. Now, Don P. has changed my life. I was privileged to meet him once, but I've listened to many of his CDs. On one of his CDs, he made a statement. Don had been put in jail for I think 20 to life. And he got sober in jail, and he asked his sponsor, how will I ever make amends? He talks about on the senior sponsor, well, he said, take an empty chair, sit in front of you, talk to the chair as if the person were there, make him as if you could ever get out of this place, you'll go look for those people. And what Don said was, sitting in that 6x8 cell, I was freer than I had ever been in my life. And I understood that. I understood that. I get goosebumps when I think about that. But I got it. It wasn't about making amends. It was about being willing to make the amends. If I can do this, I am going to do this. And when I get willing to make amends to them all is when I get free. Step 9, I can get more freedom. I also get to set them free because I've held them prisoner with my problems. I've helped. My alcoholism has created problems for them. My whole family suffered from alcoholism. None of them drank except for me. My mom didn't drink, my dad did, but they suffered from alcoholism. My alcoholism. And I held them prisoner. And I never saw that. So, it goes on to say, you know, we attempt to sweep away the debris. Am I going to be able to sweep it all away? Probably not. But it also gives me another prayer. It says, if we haven't the will to do this, we ask until it comes. Remember, it was agreed at the beginning we would go to any lengths for victory over alcoholism. One of the guys, I think it was Joe, no, it was Mark Houston. Mark Houston used to always say, have you really done the steps or have you done 9.5? Did you? Where am I with my amends? I have one outstanding amends. And I've made the approach 3 times. He does not want to see me. I am good on my amends. That took me 6, almost 7 years to do that. But I had to get free. How free do you want to be? I mean, it's just that simple. How free do you want to be? You want to be a little free or you want to be really free? I have total freedom today. They're going to go into step 9 and they give us some ideas. The first thing is that probably there are still some misgivings. Now, this is about general amends. As we look at a list of business acquaintances and friends, it gives me some pointers. There are some people we should not approach with a spiritual approach on the first approach, it says. So what that means is there might be more than one approach for an amends. I had to do 3 different amends with my mom. I made my first amends, and then 2 or 3 years later, I realized I was dating a girl that had children. And the kids said they'd be home in an hour. They never came home. I was losing my mind. Where are these kids? I said, oh my God, I did this to my mother every day. I never realized that. I had to go back home, make amends to my mom again. Then 2 years later, my mom got sick and was dying. And I had to go make some more amends. And the truth is, it tells me that there can be more than one approach. And on the top of page 77, there's a word that I missed for years. I thought that this book said, my real purpose was to be of maximum service. And it doesn't say that. It says, our real purpose is to fit ourselves to be of maximum service to the people around us. So the fit word I missed. My job is not to be of maximum service. God's going to use me to be of maximum service if I am fit. How do I get fit to be of maximum service? By doing what this book asks, by doing it to the best of my ability, all of this step work that is outlined in this way of life, the way the first 100 lived. I do not know what I can leave out. I know if I do what they did, I can get what they got. That's get free. That's live happy, joyous, and free. That is to have a solution to all my problems. I want that. So I try, and my experience has been, the closer I stay to precisely the clear-cut, specific directions in this book, the easier my life goes. I have many, many less rough moments. And when I do have a rough moment, God usually has a steamroller. He can smooth it out for me, as long as I know where to go. So I had to learn what it meant to fit myself. There are also some great directions on what not to do. On the bottom of page 77, it says under no condition do we criticize such a person or argue. Now, there are so many little things. You know, it tells me how to make amends to an enemy. That was a big one for me. Right above under no condition, it says that we go to an enemy. And my experience is one of my best amends was with a guy that I hated. And then later on, my best amends ever was with my father, who I hadn't spoken to in 8 years. I could not stand my father. I hated him with a passion. I had a disgust for him. And what I've come to learn because of my program of Alcoholics Anonymous, my father did the best he could. And he's literally a good man. Today, he's my closest friend. I love him dearly. He's 91 years old. And we tell each other we love him. I love you, Dad. And he said, I love you too. That could not have happened without Alcoholics Anonymous. And I considered him an enemy. I wanted nothing to do with him. So it gives me so many different, but it also goes on to say that these are just some general guidelines. Every situation is totally different. I don't tell anyone how to make an amends. I can share some of my experience, but every situation is totally different. I love the piece in the middle of page 78. It might be my favorite piece. Most alcoholics owe money. That was, when I read that, I just okie dokie. Now, again, I'm not going to tell you I'm right or I'm wrong. I don't believe in it. But what does the book say? I was told by one of my teachers that if I owed $500 from 10 years ago, I had to figure out interest. And I'm like, no, whoa. No. What does the book say? A couple of lines that says, telling them we're trying to do, make no bones about our drinking. They usually know anyway whether we think so or not. Nor are we afraid of disclosing our alcoholism on a theory it may cause financial harm. Approached in this way, the most ruthless creditor will sometimes surprise us. Here we go. Arranging the best deal we can. Now, when I got here, I had $60,000 worth of outstanding debts. Some with the friends, many with IRS, credit cards, student loans. And I said to him, I can't. There's no way I can pay that. I don't have that kind of money. And he said, well, God's got all the money in the world. He said, you're going to just start writing checks, whether it's $5 or $50. See, if you owe $1 million and you send someone a check for a dollar, you become the person who pays their bills instead of the person who ducks their creditor. It's just that simple. Do you want to be the person that ducks their creditor, or do you want to be the person that pays their bill? So now I owe a string of nines. I don't owe $1 million anymore. But I made the best, and what I did was I made the best deal possible. I started calling. I got a credit report. I found all my debts. I started calling people and said, look, can I send you $50 a month? And I was privileged to have a mom who had some money. So most of them would accept a third. If I owed $6,000, they'd accept $2,000 if I paid it up front. So mom would give me $2,000, I'd pay it up front, and I'd pay her $100 a week for 20 weeks. And I did that, and it took me almost 6 years, but I'm debt-free. And one of my favorite ones, trust God, clean house. One guy told me I owed him $10,000, and I said, I never had a credit card with $10,000. Look, I got your Social Security number. I said, you know what, send me a bill. And he sent me a bill, and it was blank. It had nothing on it. I called him up. He said, well, that's our general contract that we give. He says, you know what? I said, I want something with my name on it. He said, you know what? We'll see you in court. I said, yes, you will. And when we went to court, I had a good laugh because I had been doing this for about 2 years now. And I knew some of their language. And when the judge asked, after he made his little spiel, the judge said, Mr. DeLeo, do you have anything to say for yourself? And I said, Your Honor, I've been trying to clean up my past for the last few years, and I've been paying back all of my creditors. All of them have given me a bill. I called and asked them, told them I'd be glad to make the payment arrangements, and he didn't give me a copy of the bill. He said to the lawyer, he said, have you given Mr. DeLeo a copy of the bill? He said, well, we sent them a general, and I said, no, they didn't send me nothing with my name on it. And the judge looked at him, he said, I don't remember his name, Mr. whatever. He said, I wouldn't give you $10,000 if you had nothing with my name on it. Why do you think Mr. DeLeo should give you $10,000 if you have nothing with his name on it? And the judge said, well, we, and the judge said, get out of my court, you idiot. $10,000 just gone. Now, I don't know if I owed the money, but if, I'm not going to just give you, a lot of people had my Social Security number. So, we don't want to go there. But, yeah, I'm not giving you $10,000 because you know my Social Security number.
Right.
You know, I mean, it's just not going to happen. Now, the deal is, there are so many directions in here, but they also give us prayer. I never hear people talking about the 9-step prayer. Top of page 79. It says, although these reparations take innumerable forms, there are some general principles which we find guiding. General principles, that's what they're giving me. It says, reminding ourselves we have decided to go to any lengths. They are reminding us again. They remind us three times in two or three pages that we have decided to go to any lengths. I lost myself. General, reminding ourselves we have decided to go to any lengths to find a spiritual experience. Here's the 9-step prayer. We ask that we be given strength and direction to do the right thing, no matter what the personal consequences may be. And I love my little stories because I didn't really want to go to jail. But I had an amends that could put me in jail. And I went to one of my teachers and I spoke to him about it. And he asked me some questions. And he said, "Who you live with?" I said, "My mom." He said, "Are you paying rent?" I said, "No, she's letting me stay for free for now." He said, "Are you supporting anyone?" I said, "No, just myself." He said, "So if you go to jail, no one's going to get harmed but you." I said, "Yeah, me." And he said, "It doesn't matter. You got to go make the amends." He said, "Do you remember where the book said we are in the world to play the role that he assigns?" I said, "What's that got to do with amends?" He said, "What if his role for you is to sponsor someone in jail?" See, I don't get to pick and choose. I do not get, I'm in the world to play the role that he assigns. I made a deal in step 3. Relieve me of the bondage of stuff that I may better do thy will. Take away my difficulties, they fix you over them, may bear witness to those I would help. What if he needs me to help someone in jail? I don't get to say I don't want to go there. It doesn't work that way. So I had to go and make that amends. I was very privileged to not end up in jail. He didn't need me to sponsor anybody in jail. Hope that's for you too, but you know, that's between you and God. The deal is, there's so much said underneath it. It says usually other people are involved. So the deal is, I've sponsored men, and I have two men from my own group that I sponsored. They had the same exact situation on their 8-step list, exact, almost to the letter. And I told one of them that he needed to make the amends, and I told the other one he didn't. And people said, "Well, why?" Well, one guy was single. The other guy was married, divorced, paying alimony and child support, remarried and supporting a family. If he went to jail, he would harm two families. They will all depend. The other guy was a single kid. He can make the amends. If he goes to jail, he's going to go to jail. No one's getting harmed except him. And the book is real clear on that. So we must be hard on ourselves, gentle with others. So the deal is, you know, I don't tell them they have to make it. I tell them if I were in that situation, I would have to make it. Because I don't play God. I don't know what amends anyone needs to make. Thing is, for me, I had to understand what an amends was. Because when I got here, I had the words confused. I thought to amend meant to fix. Thought I had to fix all my old relationships. But I had to fix the things that I did wrong. And that is not an amends. That is to mend. If I mend something, I am fixing it. To amend is to change. We amend our constitution. We change it, hopefully for the better. You know, I mean, that's the idea behind an amends. So what that means is, if I am not a changed person, I can't make an amends. I'm still making an apology. Mm-hmm. If I come to you and say, "I'm sorry I stole that $100 from you, here's your $100 back." Next week I steal $100 from someone else. That was not an amends. That was an apology. And the book is pretty clear. It says, a simple "I'm sorry" just won't fill the bill. So I had to change before I could start making these amends. My personal experience, early recovery, I wanted to make amends because I was hearing all of these promises. And with 6 years, I had to make amends for a lot of my amends. A lot of amends that I made with 2 and 3 years, I need to make amends for. I hurt the people I was trying to help. And that's pretty interesting. Yeah, and I had to go back and make amends for it. So it's pretty important, in my eyes, to seek counsel. Ask someone who's had experience. I mean, you know, sounded like a great idea when I had a month to go make amends to my mom. You know, and you know, it was okay. But I had to go make amends for that amends. Sounded okay to make amends to my sister. Had to make amends for that amends. Couple of ex-girlfriends. Had to make amends for those amends. Because I didn't seek counsel. I just went and thought. First off, I went to show them, "Look, I gained 10 pounds. I got some teeth. I got hair again. You know, I'm not drinking. Look at me." It was all about ego. It was all about ego. And it's really, the reemergence of ego in my life was horrible. Because I really believed in my first year or so that I did this. And today I can tell you for a fact, my sobriety is nothing that I have done. Of myself I am nothing. With him I am all things. And that's been my experience. On the bottom of page 79, it talks about the guy that might get arrested. So we thought he ought to be willing to do that if necessary. But if he were in jail, he could provide nothing for either family. Very similar to my experience. We suggested he write his first wife, admitting his faults, asking forgiveness. He did. And also sent a small amount of money. See, they don't want to hear our words. They want to see our actions. I have a great little saying that's in the front of my book. It says, let your actions speak so loud they can't hear what you say. You know, and that's the deal. I had to start doing things differently, not saying things. Because I had been saying I'm sorry for many, many years. And in making an amends, I had to learn, I was taught. The way we do it is I put all, my list goes on index cards with the person's name. If I know how to get in touch with them, their address or their phone number, the harm that I know I caused, and I don't show up and make an amends. I knock on it. People say, "Oh, no, you don't go knocking on somebody's door. It's just not right." I don't show up in people's homes. What if she's married? You know, not that you make an appointment. I've been taught make an appointment, make a phone call, send an email, send a letter. Somehow make an appointment. And if the person doesn't want to see you, you don't go. And if the person does want to see you, my experience goes like this. I know I harmed you. So I go to see her and I say, can we talk? And she says, yes. And we sit and I say, you know, you remember about 5-6 years ago when that night you accused me of stealing that $100 and I convinced you I didn't do it? She said, you did it, didn't you? And I said, I did. And I'm trying to live a different life today. And I'm trying to make right the wrongs of my past. So I'd like to make that right. Is there any other harm I caused you that I don't know about? See, just because I think I know how I harmed someone does not mean I know how I harmed someone. So she said, well, I think you owe my daughter an amends. And I was like, your daughter was 3 at the time. And she said, yeah, but that was her birthday money. She didn't get a gift that year because you stole her birthday money. And I think you owe my daughter an amends. And so I gave her $100 and I went and bought her daughter, who was then, I think, 9 or 10. She was older. It was like 7 years later. And I bought her daughter a gift. And I didn't say, hey, there's an amends. I said, hey, happy birthday. I showed up with a gift for the kid because they didn't have a lot of money. And I was so privileged because until the kid turned 16, I'd show up every year with a birthday gift for her. See, that those are gifts that God gives us. So we don't know the harm that we caused just because we think we do. So it's my job to ask. You know, I mean, most of my amends went well. I was asked to leave a few places. They didn't like me when I was drunk. They said, we don't like you sober. Just get out of here. You know, and my sponsor at the time, there was a couple of girls that I wanted to make amends to. He said, the best amends you could ever make to them is never darken their doorstep. Mm. So I never went and knocked on their doors. Because I didn't know if they had gotten married in the last 7 years. I had no idea. Show up at somebody's door banging on, you know, husband answers the door. It just doesn't work like that. The amends is that I don't act that way anymore. I don't do those things anymore. And if I ever run into them, I had one girl that I had on my list that I said I'd never make amends to. I didn't even know her name. She was the girl with the pink underwear. That's all I knew about her. She wore pink underwear. That's the only thing I remembered about her. But I owed her an amends. And I remembered what she looked like. And then one day, I was about 2.5-3 years sober, standing in front of Burger King on 86th Street in Brooklyn, underneath the train station. The L was above. And I hear somebody yell, Paulie? Girl with the pink underwear. Sitting on the steps. And I said, oh my God, you got a minute? And she came down and we went in Burger King. And I bought a lunch and we spoke. And I got to make that amends. Then there was someone else that threw me out of his office. Didn't want to talk to me. Wanted nothing to do with me. 2 years later, he came into my home group. And he sat down at a meeting. And after the meeting, he walked up and he says, I need to make amends to you for when I threw you out of my office. And I know what you were trying to do. And I let him make amends to me, and then I got to make amends to him. See, my job is to stay willing. If they show up, I'm always willing to make. That's why the freedom comes from step 8, being willing to make the amends. Doesn't matter what they say. They don't want to hear it. It's fine. They might change their mind later. I want to go to page 80. First, second, third paragraph down. You know, the guy had done something he thought he could never make right. And it says, after consulting with his wife and partner, he came to the conclusion it was better to take those risks than stand before his creator guilty of such ruinous slanders. And here's the line. He saw that he had to place the outcome in God's hands, or he would soon start drinking again, and all would be lost anyhow. See, I had to get out of the results business. That's the outcome. I got it. None of my business. My job is to put in my best effort. Results are God's business. They are not mine. The outcome of any given situation, none of my business. My business is to suit up, show up, just do the best I can. Leave the results up to God. Now, I wouldn't recommend doing what he did, getting up at the podium in church and announcing to the fellowship that you did all this messed up. That was 1939. There was probably 30 people in the church. It was probably a little different today. But you know, there are some general guidelines. And the truth is, experience has proven to me it's great to seek counsel. But when I seek counsel today, it has changed. Because when I first started this, I would seek counsel from one person, and I didn't like what they said, so I seek counsel from someone else. I'm going to go with it. So the deal is, what I do today is I choose one person to seek counsel from, take that counsel into meditation, sit quietly with God for 20 minutes, and I let God be the final judge. I do not do what people tell me to do. I do what God tells me to do. Because just because something's right for me does not mean it's right for you. So I don't tell anyone what they should do. I don't really know what anyone needs to do. I know what I've done and what I continue to do. On 81, the middle of the page, he's talking about, you know, husbands and wives having problems in sexual areas and stuff, you know, cheating and stuff. Middle of the page is, whatever the situation is, we usually have to do something about it. So it's telling me that I have to do something. I can't just say, let's just make believe this never happened. You know, the idea, this is all about getting humility, getting humble. I need to become humble. And what that means is, I got to make this right. I got to try to make this right. But it gives me stuff. It says, undoubtedly we should admit the affair, but we leave out the particulars. Because I have no right causing someone else harm. If my wife's going to leave me because I told her the truth, then I got to be willing to accept that that's God's will. See, that's the point. I can't say, no, because if I tell her, just listen, we just came back from Fellowship of the Spirit, and the guy talked about that, and he did something, and he said, you know, a year and a half later, he still hadn't told his wife. His sponsor had told him, he said, you know, he says, you don't have to tell. He says, I might tell. And he said, I took that as a no, so I didn't tell her. And a year and a half later, he had another situation. He said, and I had to tell her. And he went and he told her, and he said, we worked it out. He said, but then last year, he says, I went and I did the same thing again. But this time I corrected it immediately, same day. And I went and I told my sponsor. And he said, you know, you got to go home and tell your wife. He said, no. He said, yeah. He says, she'll be very proud that you did it in a day instead of a year and a half this time. So the deal is, there's no way out here. You know, there's no loopholes. I have not found anything in this book that will allow me to take a different path. Not if I want to do what they did. See, that my experience is, I do not know what I can change in their program and still stay sober. So I have made a decision to not change anything. And if you can't tell me what page it's on in this book, then it's not the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. On the bottom of page 81, it says, our design for living is not a one-way street. So they're telling me it's a design for living. It's not something I do. I no longer say I did the steps. You can't do the steps. The steps are not something that can be done. Either you're going to live this way or you're not. You can go through the process, and then you need to start doing the work. The work is not the steps. The work is taking someone else through the steps. The process is the steps. So we go through this process, recover from alcoholism, and then we go and we learn a design for living. It says on the top of 82, perhaps there are some cases where the utmost frankness is demanded. No outsider can appraise such an intimate situation. So in other words, I got to make the... Every situation is going to be different. It's one of the main reasons why I tell everybody, you need to go to God. I do not have an answer for you. Unless I've had the same exact situation in my life, I will share my experience with you. but that doesn't mean it's going to be your experience. My experience will not keep anyone else sober, just me. Next paragraph says, if we have no such complication, there is plenty we should do at home. Sometimes we hear an alcoholic say, the only thing he needs to do is keep sober. Certainly he must keep sober, for there will be no home if he doesn't. But he is yet a long way from making good to the wife or parents whom for years he has so shockingly treated. Now the truth of the matter is, I hear people talking about living amends. There's no such thing. I don't know where people come up with it. Show it to me. It's not in this book. Living right is not an amends. Because I have become the son that my mother should have always had, that is not an amends. I had to make direct amends for the things that the harms that I caused her. I needed to make. Living right does not count as an amends. I don't know who started that. I don't know where it came from. It's not in this book anywhere. Actually, later on, it says every day is a day. We must carry the vision of God's will into all our activities. So living right is not considered an amends. I mean, if you do, God bless you. But, you know, think about that for a minute. I'm a better husband now. That's not an amends. What about the money you stole? What about the money I stole from my mother? How is living right make that right? I had to go to my mother in a state of humbleness and say, Mom, I'm sorry. I did these things. How can I make that right? And Mom didn't want the money back. I was blessed with a teacher who told me a lot of Alcoholics Anonymous is about balance. We have an equilateral triangle. Got to be balanced in all three sides of the triangle. He says, if you take from the universe what is not yours, you need to put it back in the universe, or the universe is out of balance. So the deal is, even though Mom did not want the money, it was only $900. She did not want it. She would not take it. But I couldn't keep it. I thought I could keep it. My sponsor said, no. You got to go donate that somewhere. I can't keep what I took from the universe. And someone once said to me, what if I took $100,000? If you were able to take $100,000, you'll be able to pay back $100,000. Just that simple. If you were capable of taking $100,000 while you were living foul, then you'll be able to put... God's got all the money in the world. And my experience is, I mean, I didn't have that kind of money, but I was able to pay back that $60,000. And more, because after all my amends were complete, many of my amends were in the form of contributions. I stole a bicycle from a kid that lived next door to me three times, I think. And, you know, none of my list. He was on my harms other than list. We made a list in 8 people we hurt that weren't on our footstep. And what happened was, I didn't know where he was. I was a kid when he lived there. But what I did was I bought a couple of bicycles and I donated them to areas where they were giving the bikes to kids of lower income families. You know, there's always a way. There's always a way. And if I don't know it, someone else will. So I've learned that, because if I don't know what to do, I'll call one of my teachers. I said, what do you think I should do about this? He'll say, you know what, I don't know, but I'll get back to you. And he'll go ask one of his teachers. And he'll ask one of his... I've always gotten an answer. No one has ever left me hanging dry without an answer to a question. I've always gotten an answer. And then on 83, down at the toward the bottom, no, actually the top of the page, we're going to start it. It says, yes, there is a long period of reconstruction ahead. We must take the lead. So I hear people say, well, you know, they'll show up in your life when you support. No. No one was looking for me when I got sober. When I decided to start making amends, people were very, very content not seeing me anymore. They were very happy that I was not in their area of vision. So the deal is, no one was looking for me. It says, we must take the lead. It means I have to start looking for the people I hurt. It's not their job to find me. It is my job to find them and make right the wrong. The next paragraph says, the bottom of that paragraph says, so we clean house with the family, asking each morning in meditation that our Creator show us the way of patience, tolerance, kindliness, and love. Now that's a direction. It doesn't say for the first 6 months of your sobriety. It says asking each morning. Now, in my wife and I, every morning we start with prayer. And one of the things we pray for is patience, tolerance, understanding. it says I should do that. Why? I don't know why. I do it because the book says I should. Am I going to drink if I leave that out? I don't think so. I'm not willing to find out. I'm just not willing to find out. It says the spiritual life is not a theory. We have to live it. So I actually have to do these things. I can't study these things, read about these things, teach these things to other people. That's not going to help me get sober. I have to live these things. That's my experience. The only way I got better was when I actually started doing these things. My wife laughs at my story because in early recovery, I bought a book called Big Book Awakening, written by a gentleman named Mark Houston. And it was all his experience with the steps. And he gave quotations about, showed you what page, and I read it, I memorized it. And my first year or two, I sounded like I had 10 years because I was quoting his book and people were patting me on the back. But what happened is then people started asking me to sponsor them and I didn't know how. I didn't know what to do. So I actually had to go out and my ego caught up with me because I didn't want to get caught. So I had to get a sponsor and actually do what the book said. And I actually got better. I got better because I did. Not because I knew what the book said. Because I did what the book said. Because in knowing what the book said, I was still miserable every day. Life was not happy, joyous, and free. I was not a free man. I was still trying to make it through one day at a time. Just don't drink today. And that's a horrible way to live. That's just a horrible way to live. Taking a different route home because I didn't want to pass the bar. Being afraid to go to my friend's birthday party because they were drinking. That's a horrible way to live. I don't live like that no more. I've been through this process, made these amends. And the deal is, earlier, I read it, we have to fit ourselves. If I have outstanding amends, I am not fit to be of maximum service. Because one of those people might have a son or a daughter that needs help. And I can't go give them help because they're still, we're still angry at each other. It also says anger is a dubious luxury that I cannot afford. So if I'm angry, I need to be rid of that, whatever it is. And the truth of the matter is, many of my amends, the person that I was making amends to had done me more harm than I had done them. But we're not here to clean their side of the street. Doesn't matter that I know he stole $1,000 from me. I stole $500 from him. Got to give him his $500 back. I don't get to deduct it from the $1,000 he stole from me. It doesn't work like that. When he's making his amends one day, maybe, and I've had it happen. I had a guy show up, my friend Lonnie, owed me, showed up one day and said, I know I owe you an amends. He said, you know, I took that money and I had a check come in the mail one day from someone who I lent money to. So I'm so sorry he took this long. God takes care of it. I don't worry about any of it. I just don't worry about any of it. And the next paragraph says, there may be some wrongs we can never fully right. We don't worry about them. If we can honestly say to ourselves that we would right them if we could. It also gives me directions on how to make the amends. The last sentence in that paragraph, right before the promises, says we should be sensible, tactful, considerate, and humble without being servile or scraping. As God's people, we stand on our feet. We don't crawl before anyone. Now, personal experience, when I go to make an amends, I probably deserve some whiplash. And it does. I will allow anyone 2 minutes, maybe three. After 3 minutes, I will say, you know what, I'm sorry you feel that way. Have a great day. And I leave. Because I am not going to allow anyone to talk down to me. But I will give you your 2 or 3 minutes. Because I did harm you and hold you prisoner for all these years. But I am not bowing. I bow before my Creator. No one else. No one else. And then comes the best part. If we are painstaking about this phase of our development, what phase? The amends phase. I love when they read these problems at the beginning of a meeting. I wanted them. I had 3 days. They forgot to tell me I had to do all this other stuff first. These are ninth step promises. We are going to a new freedom and a new happiness. See, I was already free. And I was already happy. I get freer and happier. There is no cap. There's no end to the freedom and the happiness here. That is my experience. It just gets better as I go. Going to know a new freedom, a new happiness, we will not regret the past, nor wish to shut the door on it. we will comprehend the word serenity, we will know peace. No matter how far down the scale we have gone, we will see how our experience can benefit others. That feeling of uselessness and self-pity will disappear. We will lose interest in selfish things, gain interest in our fellows. Self-seeking will slip away. Our whole attitude and outlook upon life will change. Fear of people and of economic insecurity will leave us. We will intuitively know how to handle situations which used to baffle us. We'll suddenly realize God is doing for us what we could not do for ourselves. Are these extravagant promises? I think so. I think so. Yes, they are. I really do. I think that they're extravagant. The truth is, when they wrote this, they had already recovered. As a recovered alcoholic, they are not extravagant, because I've experienced all of them. But when a new guy walks in the door, when I got 4 days and I hear this, those are extravagant promises. That's why I really don't believe we should be reading at the beginning of a meeting. I really don't. Because when I came, I thought that if I just sat here, I could get these promises. And I sat around for 105 days. And I didn't get no promises. I got nothing. I got nothing, because all I did was sit here. They didn't tell me the next little piece, which it says they are being fulfilled among us. Sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly. Slowly, they will always materialize if we work for them. They're not a gift. They're not given to you. You have to work for them. Something funny about the promises, and I'm going to close with this. If you put the words, when I take a drink, before the promises, they will come true. See, when I take a drink, I will know a new freedom and a new happiness. When I take a drink, I will not regret the past, nor wish to shut the door on it. When I take a drink, I will know serenity, and I will know peace. See, because alcohol worked. Alcohol was my solution. So when I took a drink, I got these promises. But then the drink started to backfire on me, and there were more problems. In the beginning, it was not bad. I didn't get arrested. I didn't go to jail. I didn't get beat up and end up in a hospital. That was when I was 18, 20 years of drinking. The first 5, 8, 10 years were fun. Drinking worked. It was treating my alcoholism. When I was restless, irritable, and discontent, I took a drink. These promises came true for me. But now, I can have these without taking a drink. That's my experience. Earlier in the book, it said we had to know a sense of ease and comfort that we saw others get by taking a few drinks. I have actual ease and comfort today. No longer a sense. I do not have a sense of ease and comfort. I am comfortable in my own skin today. I could never say that before. Thanks for having me.
Thank you.
We got 10 minutes for comments and questions. Otherwise, I tell stories again.